Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
This is the best of the Steve Jones Show. Day number one for an entire week of best ofs as Steve takes a little bit of R&R, a rare Steve vacation, as he likes to say. Me, on the other hand, I take him about every other day. But that's a whole different topic. Kevin Herr in the Sunbury Motors Studio East. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. You'll find Kia on Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. North 4th Street Auto Plaza has Ford, Lincoln, and also Hyundai cars to choose from. Four different lines. If you can't find something there, you got a serious problem. Or you're way too picky. That could be a possibility. Just kidding. Sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury is the Monday show. Even when it's a best of, Purdy Insurance says, hey, we like to be a part of this, and we like to have them a part of it, too. Find out how they can be a part of you saving money and being covered with insurance, whether it be home, life, auto, whatever your needs. Purdy Insurance can do something for you. That's save you money and give you great service. PurdyInsurance.com is the place to look there. We're talking all Penn State football. So post-blue-white game, Steve caught up with Rich Scarsella of the Reading Eagle to get his thoughts. Rich Scarsella joins us, who is anticipating a huge celebration when his guy A-Rod hits number 660 and ties Willie Mays. Hi, Rich.
I don't think I've ever said that.
No, you have not. You know what? You have never been a fan of 13, really.
Not a big fan, no. No, no, not at all.
No.
But he's off to a terrific start.
No, I mean, credit was credits due. I mean,
yeah.
He is off to a great start. In all of your blue-white experience.
26 of them.
Along with game experience.
Uh-huh.
Right. Did you get anything out of that?
No. No. I don't buy anything into other than, and I don't want to pick on the kid because he just got there, but Paris Palmer struggled Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Against Evan Schwann and
Curtis Cothran.
Okay. You know, that's fine. The thing that struck me about him was that he's a lot leaner than I expected to see. But other than that, and he's got lots of time to put on weight, B, to learn the system and make improvements. So, out of that, with all the guys missing, I don't put a lot of stock into it. I know it's a big day for recruiting. I know it's a big day for image. I understand that. I get that. The fact that they had the third. Is it the third largest attendance, Steve?
Yes,
so
far? Yeah, number three so far.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I understand that. I know why, but you know, you do it and everything. But to me, to read a lot into it, no, I just don't.
You get a chance though when you're done to go into the media room and talk mm-hmm. with some of the players. So, what were some of the common themes that were brought out as you worked your way around?
I think the common theme was guys who hadn't played were pretty excited to be out there playing. We didn't talk to freshmen. I'm talking about kids, you know, guys who haven't played a lot, like an Evan Schwann and a Curtis Cotton, who had two sacks each, and sacks in quotes. I think the common theme is just the comfort. You know, being comfortable. I wrote a column for Saturday, the day of the blue-white game, that said that, you know, the buzzword, and this isn't anything new. I mean, anybody who covers the team knows this. The buzzword has been comfortable and comfort level. And being that this is James Franklin's second year and his staff's second year with these group of players, and I think there's an increased comfort level, and I think that makes things better, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the message. Coming out of spring, I think people also talked about, and you probably have touched on this the last week or two, Christian Hackenberg is taking a different leadership role, a more assertive and a more positive leadership role, and I think by all indications it's been received pretty well. And I think Naeem Wortman, who didn't play Saturday, it's clear that he's one of the leaders on the defense.
Yeah.
along with Anthony Zettelin and Austin Johnson. And so they're the stuff. Actually, the interviews that we've done over the last 2-3 weeks were more revealing than what we saw on Saturday.
Really?
I think so. I mean, not that there was anything alarming or anything, but the fact is, you know, you learn some things, you know. But I was really, I got to say this, Steve, and I'm sure you feel the same way. I was disappointed I didn't get to see Trace McSorley play.
Sure.
You know, because James Franklin had talked about what a great spring he had. Christian Hackenberg had talked about what a great spring he had had.
Right.
And, you know, and John Donovan mentioned that after the game. He thought it was a shame that fans and we in the media couldn't see that. And so I'm looking forward to seeing him on the field in a game situation.
Right, and that's the tough part, because he could not go last week. And I'm talking about the week he couldn't
go.
And that's just something you're just not counting on. I mean, you know darn well that they would have preferred that Christian Hackenberg play, what, I don't know, 2-4 series and have Trace McSorley play a ton.
I think James said 1 or 2 series. Yeah. That was after, when I asked him about it after the game, they had planned to play Christian 1 or 2 series and then McSorley the rest of the Blue-White game. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, everybody wanted to see him, most especially Trace, but just, you know, sometimes things don't work and it just didn't work for him.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's pretty clear defensively. It's pretty clear that the secondary is going to be very good. I think the linebackers will still be very good. They'll miss Mike Hull for sure. But I don't think there's going to be a big drop off, if there's any drop off at all. And I just think the two guys in the middle of that defense, 98-99 are just going to cause havoc throughout the season. And I think the defensive ends, who, from all indications, a Carl Nassib and a Garrett Sickles have played well, I think they're going to benefit from that.
Oh, I agree. There's a domino there. That's the first thing Jack Ham said on the broadcast was, I've looked at the two rosters. He says, the first thing I looked to see is which team happened to have 98-99 on it. He says, I'm going in that direction. He says, only because it's 98-99, not because of who they're facing.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, and of course, Bob Shoup would know this. After the game, he told us, I guess the first team defense was on the field for 9 series. Seven of them were 3 and out.
Right.
And I don't know what it was, negative yardage on more than half those series. I can't remember the exact numbers. But the fact is, I think Penn State's defense is going to be as good or maybe even a notch better, especially in the secondary, than they were last year. And, you know, there's some work to do on the offensive line, obviously, and that's not a big shock. But I think it'll be better. You know, then the situation was, it is better than the situation last year, and go from there.
Because they were going to have a full comp, I should start over again. They're going to have close to a full complement, probably have 79, 80, 81 scholarship guys on the team.
Mm-hmm.
All of us love the walk-on, run-on program, and there's certainly a depth of talent in the state, but there's also a difference as to why, For the most part, why a guy's a scholarship player and why a guy's a walk-on.
Mm-hmm.
In the cases like a Carl Nassib or a Ryan Kaiser, they become scholarship players.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that special teams will probably be populated by the vast majority, if not all, scholarship players, can that be a difference maker as to what we see in special teams outside of the kicking part of it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought up special teams. Yeah, I think it'll be a big part of it. I think you're going to see improved play there. Obviously we don't know what the kicking situation is going to be. We think, you know, we saw that Daniel Pascarello improved late in the season last year as the punter. Joey Julius obviously has a strong leg. He's the leading candidate to be the kicker. We don't know how accurate he's going to be in a game. We don't know that yet. But I would agree with you. I think, like, coverage and return, both those games, I think they'll be better for sure. Yeah,
and I think it'll make a big difference for them in what we see.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point at one stage, I think it was in 13, where like the kick cover team had 8 walk-ons on it.
Yeah,
like wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 2 or 3, okay, sure, I get that.
Sure,
yeah, 8. You know, that's, it's nice, and you know, you give the kids, those 8 kids, a lot of credit, but you know, you hit it right in the head. There's a reason they're walk-ons, and there's a reason why they're scholarship players. So yeah, I think the special teams will be better. I think James Franklin expects that the special teams will be better. I think Charles Huff does too. I would agree with them. I think they have to be better if you want to be a championship team.
What becomes your focal point between now and the start of training camp? What assignments do you usually take on this time of the year?
Oh, okay. Well, right now, as I told Ryan Tripp, I was sitting here waiting to see whether my high school baseball game would be postponed, and it was. Huh. I cover high school baseball in the spring. Enjoy it. It's pretty good brand of ball, and for those familiar with the Penn State baseball team, pitcher Nick DeStacio, I've covered from Ole Valley. Mm-hmm. I've covered him the last few years. He's a freshman at Penn State.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that. And then I have some freelance work to do. And once baseball season ends, hopefully for Berks County schools, one of them will be playing at Medler Field in second Friday or whatever it is, the first Friday in June.
Right.
After that, I have until July 29th when I leave for Chicago to take a majority of my vacation.
Great. I like that.
So, it comes fast. I mean, that July, you know, boy, it comes fast. It does. And so that's basically what I do. I mean, I cover local college basketball, too. And, I'll write a story or two about that between now and the beginning of football. And that's really it.
Yeah. Good. You deserve some time. So
yeah.
Enjoy it.
Thanks.
Take in a Yankee game somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to make my first trip to Dodger Stadium next week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my son works out there, my younger son.
Yes, yeah. You told me that. I remember that.
And they're playing the Giants, and we have tickets to see them next week. So we're pretty excited because I have never been to Dodger Stadium. I didn't even the two times Penn State was in the Rose Bowl just to drive. I wanted to just to drive up and see what it was like. I haven't even been that close.
Yeah, I've only driven by it. That's it.
Yeah,
always wanted to go see it, and that people don't realize it is the. It's what, the third oldest ballpark in the majors now?
It is, behind.
Fenway and Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
And people tell you it still looks like it was built 10 years ago.
Yeah. Now my son is a big baseball fan. He likes Dodger Stadium much more over Anaheim, but that's another story. He said he didn't care too much for Anaheim Stadium. but he is an American League fan.
Right.
So. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That'll be fun, and these next couple months will go fast.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah,
Rich, always a pleasure. It was great spending time with you.
Anytime, thank you.
Hey, I enjoyed spending Saturday night with you too. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was. What we did was for Jeff Nelson. It was going to be Jeff Nelson's transitioning out of. He'll still do a lot of work with football, but we'll be doing work in other areas. So they wanted to do something for him to thank him for all he's done. And the writers did that. And it was a really great thing. A lot of fun. A little bit of a roast for him as well.
Rich Scarsella from the Reading Eagle talking post-blue-white with Steve from earlier this spring. It's an all-Penn State Best of the Steve Jones Show. We'll talk a little Penn State metrics coming up in the next few minutes. Mike Brennan, Fight on State in the next half hour. You're listening to the Best of the Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Kevin Hearn, the Sunbury Motors Studio East, filling in for the vacationing Steve Jones on this Best of Penn State football on the Steve Jones Show. All Penn State football. Mike Brennan, Fight on State, coming up in a few minutes. But I thought this was interesting last week. Steve talked a little Penn State football metrics. Some interesting numbers here. Check it out.
David Jones wrote an article today on field position, Penn State's defense, and an analytic. Analytics are useful in so many ways. Doesn't quite replace everything. I mean, they help explain certain things. And David wrote a thoughtful argument, about Bill James' abstract, Moneyball,
Ken Pomeroy. I mean, a lot of us for basketball would go to KenPom.com on basketball analytics to help explain certain things to you. And he goes, David goes to Dave Bartu's college football site, which is CFBMatrix.com. CFBMatrix.com. That's collegefootballmatrix.com. And some stats you use to confirm what you see or what you think. And as I've told my class often in preparation, you prepare everything along the way. Kevin knows how detailed my preparation is. He's seen my charts. And I always tell them, look, you probably use 1% to 2% on that chart every game. 1% to 2% of everything you've done. But the reason all of it's there is that the 1% to 2% changes every game based on situation. And something I used midseason last year and asked James Franklin about in the pregame show and asked him about it specifically on the talk show would be field position, because Penn State, I felt, was getting crushed on field position. And last year, Clemson in the graphic was number one in the nation as to where a drive ended. Clemson drives against Clemson ended at their, on the average, at their own 47-yard line. And that's tremendous. Ohio State, for example, was number two with drives ending at the 48.8, so just beyond midfield. But Ohio State was also number one in the country where drives started. The average drive start against Ohio State this year was at their own 26-yard line. Number one. Average drive start against Clemson was the 29.5. Average drive start against TCU was the 27-yard line. Ole Miss, right, was just behind Ohio State at the 26. Memphis was the 28-yard line. Utah State was sixth in this metric with the drive start at the 29, but ending at the 47 on the other side of the field. Penn State, try this one out for size. Penn State was seventh in the nation where the drive ended. Okay, seventh in the nation where the drive ended, 46.96. Penn State was 120th in the nation of where the drive started. The average drive start against Penn State was the 33.5-yard line. That was 120th in the country. So then I went through and took that metric, and I went back to my metrics, and that's the pure field position in wins and losses. And I keep this all the time. And this is the value of, and there's a lot of things that come into play here. You know, can the offense get an additional first down? And then the big one, what can your punting game do to help you? Penn State, when they won games last year, had an average drive start of the 32-yard line. The opposition in those same seven games had an average drive start of the 29-yard line. There were 92 possessions each in the wins. So that meant in those games, those seven games, Penn State had 276 hidden yards in drive start. And in those seven wins that the Nittany Lions had, that's an average of nearly 40 yards per game, 39.4 to be exact, per game. 39.4 hidden yards per game that were in Penn State's favor. Now let's get to losses. Penn State's average drive start in a loss was the 28-yard line, 4 yards further behind where they were when they won. In the six losses, you know what the average drive start for the opposition was? The 37-yard line. That's minus 9 yards per possession. There were 84 possessions. That's 756 yards in six losses.
And when you divide that by six losses, the hidden yards in games that they lost was 126 yards a game.
There's a little Penn State football metrics, courtesy of Steve Jones. We'll have Mike Brennan from Fight On State, a nice long conversation Steve had with Mike just about a month ago, coming up as we finish up a Best of Steve Jones show, all Penn State football. Coming up later this week, we'll have more as we remember Fran Fischer and a lot of great interviews, including one with the Phillies, or former Phillies broadcaster, Chris Wheeler, who, by the way, I really miss on Phillies broadcasts. He's just that good. But it's great to have him part of the Steve Jones Show Best of Week. Today's show sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you. The news is coming up next, then Mike Brennan from Fight On State on News Radio 1070 WKOK and on WKOK.com.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Insuring your business is serious stuff. You don't need gimmicks or cutesy mascots or punchlines. You certainly don't want red tape. You just want the right coverage at the right price. We're as serious about insuring your business as you are about running it. Selective. Response is everything.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
It's the first of a week of Best of Steve Jones Show. Kevin Herr in the Sunbury Motors Studio East. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai there. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, where you'll find, well, obviously Kia. That's why they call it Sunbury Motors Kia. As I said, Steve Jones on vacation this week. All Best of talk today, including a nice long conversation Steve had recently with Mike Brennan from Fight On State. Mike doing some great writing, always does a great job when it comes to information on recruits and recruiting. He'll talk a little bit about that. And later on this week, Chris Wheeler, former Phillies broadcaster, and we'll remember Fran Fischer, too, in this Best of Steve Jones Show week. But as promised, a conversation Steve had very recently with Mike Brennan from Fight On State. This is the Best of the Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. Also available online at purdyinsurance.com.
Let's get to it with an article that you wrote for Fight On State. It's listening to James Franklin, but it's also trying to read him as well. And yeah. You came away with an interesting read about a long-term commitment.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the questions, and I don't think he gets it. I haven't heard him get it at a bunch of the, I was at a bunch of the stops on the coaches caravan, and I really have not heard fans ask him, you know, James, how long are you going to stick around? But that's the question. I don't know about you, Steve, but I get that all the time. It's like people seem to really like James Franklin, love James Franklin, everything he's doing, but the question I always get is, yeah, but how long is he going to stay? And I think there's, you know, an obvious reason for that, because Joe Paterno stayed for including as an assistant, what was it, 60 however many
62
years?
62 years.
Yeah. And then Bill O'Brien stays for two. So right. I think it's a natural question. And I didn't ask him, I didn't say from me, I said a lot of people are wondering about this.
Right.
And he basically said, you know, first of all, he tried to say, I don't know if that's a question for me, but it is a question for you, James. But he did end up answering it and said, you know, where else would I go? And right. his position on it, I was fortunate enough to get a one-on-one with him on one of the coaches' caravan stops. His position on it is that everything is here at Penn State for him to do what he needs to do.
Right.
And the one kind of caveat, the only caveat that he threw in there is that, you know, everybody needs to be pulling in the same direction.
Right.
Which is obviously the case. I mean, after everything that's gone on here, if everybody is on board, and I tend to agree with them. I mean, I think if they get into a position where everybody is on the same page, you have a program that has the facilities, that has the tradition. Say what you will about football in Pennsylvania, but there are still enough players in this region to have a good, solid recruiting base. So really, an unbelievable fan base, great alumni association, great stadium. All these things are in place. And, his point is, where else would you go from here?
Right.
So, the one thing I specifically asked him about was the NFL, because obviously Bill O'Brien aspired to go to the NFL and made no bones about it. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, the one thing that I took out of that interview, that portion of the interview, because I'll have other stories coming from it, that I thought, listen, most coaches, if you ask them how long you want to stay, they're going to say, well, I love it here. This is great. This is tremendous. There were some other things there that I thought made it more legitimate coming from James Franklin. But the part about him being more comfortable as a college coach, I don't think there's any question about that.
Right.
I don't think anybody could argue or debate that. You see the way he operates, the way he deals with people, the way he deals with kids. And by kids, I mean players, because
sure,
as you get older, like I am, you refer to them as kind of the younger generation. But yeah, I mean, he just seems to be more of a natural fit at the college level, and I think he understands that. So the takeaway, Steve, you can only take somebody at their word until they prove that you shouldn't.
Right.
And since he's been at Penn State, he's not proven that we shouldn't take his word on anything. And the fact of the matter is, I tend to believe him when he says, where else would I go? Again, the only caveat there is if, he doesn't get the support he needs, but it seems as if he is, or if the fans don't rally behind him, but I think they are, that could be the issue. But it seems to me as if he's going to be here long term.
Well, it's not as if Joe Paterno didn't hear from the Raiders, didn't hear from the Steelers,
right,
didn't hear from the Giants, and then, of course,
Patriots.
The most overt one of all,
right,
was the New England Patriots and Billy Sullivan. Wasn't like he didn't hear all of that. I mean, the older fans here remember those times,
right,
that happened. What's happened here is that, and I pointed this out last year just as a slice of perspective, after doing a pregame show with one coach all these years, I was doing a pregame show with my fourth coach in 30 games.
Right.
Before the Ireland game.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why I think people get uptight as to whether people
will
stay.
Yeah, and he gets that. That's the other part about it. Like, a lot of times if you ask a coach a question that maybe isn't the most comfortable thing,
sure,
you'll get not, he never gives you blowback, but he'll be funny about stuff. If he thinks it's not a great question,
mm-hmm,
he's really sharp. But he completely, and I have video of it up there, and I like being able to put video of some of these questions up, because sometimes people say, well, maybe that was taken out of context. You could see the actual part of the Q&A where people can say, well, no, I don't, this is exactly how he was coming across.
You can read facial expressions.
Right.
And so it's all part of it. You don't get that quizzical look like, oh, where are you going here?
Right, right. And that's, and really, to me, I asked him two questions in that portion of the interview, Steve. And his answers covered the entire thing was over just over 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of a long-winded person like me, people, if they're not comfortable with a question, usually won't go on like that. And I thought he was very comfortable with it. And it was, let me give a little bit more perspective on how this came about. I got a heads up that I was getting a one-on-one with him 25 minutes before it was going to happen.
Sure.
So you kind of, when you're on these coaches' caravans, it's the same questions being asked over and over, and you don't want to ask your best questions. I'm just saying how it is as a reporter when there's 18 other
right,
reporters around. So I get a heads up that I'm going to get a one-on-one, and I was able to ask some different, not necessarily off the wall, but some different things that maybe have not been asked quite so frequently.
Well, and that, I remember a few years ago just sitting down, and it was just a chit-chat with Billy Packer. And I asked him something about interviews, and he said, I always try to come up with one question that they haven't heard.
Right.
Which, in a scenario like this, is not easy when so many questions are asked.
Well, there were 12 stops on the caravan, yeah, and he did a press conference before every one.
Right.
So, and then he also answered questions from the from the fans or the alumni at every one. So how are you going to come up with it? And then you have to do it on 20 minutes' notice. But I had some things, obviously, in the back of my head that I was thinking about for a while.
But this is a two-prong answer. The two-prong answer is, Mark, that you're telling the fan base, hey, look, my intention is to be here a long time. Everything's in place. You're also telling recruits, I intend to be here a long time. Everything's in place.
Absolutely. And the other part of this, and a skeptic would say, well, what else is he going to say? You know, what is, no, well, I really want to get out of here. Well, actually, O'Brien did say, I aspire to coach at the NFL level, but I guess.
James Franklin has been in the NFL. He was, you know, a year with Mike Sherman at Green Bay. So at least he has a taste and understanding.
Well, and he's also part of the minority coaching, system, where he was with three different teams actually for short periods of time. So yeah, he was there, but I think, you know, one of the points I'd like to get across, or I tried to get across in the piece, was it wasn't just that he answered the question, but I think he put a lot of thought into the answer. And I don't, it didn't come across to me. And again, listen, you know, if he ends up leaving next year,
you can only take stock in what he tells
that's
you.
That's what I'm saying. And for whatever anybody wants to say, he's been, when I've asked him direct questions, he's given me direct answers on stuff since I've been here. Now, that's not every single instance. Listen, after practice, you may ask him about, you may try to ask him about an injury, and you're not going to get a direct answer on that. But I mean the important stuff. You know, if something important comes up and you ask him something directly, he's been good with me.
Recruiting-wise, even though I can't talk about it, you can. They have 10 verbals right now.
Four offensive linemen, which is huge. Yep. I mean, they really have, you know, the one area where they have to pick it up is defensive tackle. You look at the last couple years, and it's just one of those things where when you had the limits that they had, it was going to impact them at some at different positions, kind of in waves. So you look at the team now and you say, wow, when you look at Penn State's defensive tackle situation right now, it's probably about as good as anybody in the nation.
Yeah, your starting tandem of defensive tackles would be in an argument. Who's among the best tandems in the country? They would be in the argument in the conversation.
And then you add solid backups, guys who played well last year.
Barney and Cothran.
Right. And then Antoine you have White. Salt, who, White, who's an up-and-comer.
Yeah, he's a redshirt freshman.
Right.
Yeah.
So you look at that group of tackles, and you're like, wow, this is a good group of tackles. But then you look behind that.
Right.
And that's where some recruiting struggles. I don't even want to say recruiting struggles, because they were getting who they could get the last few years under the constraints that they had. So even though sanctions were lifted, it's not, everybody thinks that these things just immediately happen. So they have to, the one area, Steve, where they really have to get after it now is that defensive tackle. Because offensive line, I'll tell you what, that was clearly an area of need. I won't put you in a bad position by throwing names out there, but, you know, they got, you know, one kid from Pennsylvania who was just elevated to a 5-star on our list right now. You know, they're getting these, the kind of offensive linemen that James Franklin talked about, bigger kids, taller kids, longer kids. And now it's got to transfer over to, now that they're starting to load up there, now they can transfer, I think, over to the defensive line. And now actually had the opportunity to talk to Sean Spencer in general terms about recruiting. And I could see where, you know, you talk about Herb Hand being a good recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could see where Spencer and kind of his enthusiasm. Yeah. So I think they're going to be okay there, but it's an area where they have to pick it up. They only got one kid who's a natural D lineman last year, and he'll probably end up being a pretty good player, but they still have to really pick it up there in that area, in my view.
That's kid from Wisconsin.
Yeah, and the other area that James mentioned, obviously, is special teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they could not afford to really spend scholarships on kickers and punters. But the difficult part of that is, okay, now you think you can.
Yeah, one quick caveat on that. I don't mean to, sorry to interrupt you, Mark. They found out late in each process,
right,
in his first two recruiting cycles, that they could have a few extra kids. And they weren't told in August. They were told in the middle or the late January, and I think that's what has affected that.
Well, think about it. There are probably 2-3 scholarship-worthy kickers in the nation.
Yes, that's it.
So, and do you think that everybody isn't going after them? So if you're in their shoes last year, if you're in Penn State's shoes last year, you just immediately say, we're not even going to worry about this because the risk-reward just doesn't make sense. Well, now all of a sudden the risk-reward makes a lot of sense because not only can you afford a scholarship, but you also are looking at a situation where now, listen, we've seen a ton of walk-ons as specialists who have come and done an absolutely great job, from John Bruno to, you know, you name it, guys who have come in here and just been terrific. Robbie Gould.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just been so many of these kids who have done it. But you could also say, listen, as Penn State, if I'm a Penn State coach, I can say to a potential scholarship kicker, we don't have anybody on scholarship now. So you're going to come in and have an opportunity to compete right away. Now, if these kids are better than you, you're not going to play. But you should have an opportunity to come in and get that done. And then the other thing that, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, I think the fact that they get all these grants back, you look at their roster right now.
It's unbalanced.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
It's a very unbalanced.
They have 39 initial scholarship fresh players with freshman eligibility
freshman
this year.
Freshman or redshirt freshman.
Right, guys who have never played before. There are 39 of them of the 82.
Right.
And that's not counting. That 82 counts some walk-ons who were given scholarships.
Like Ron Walker.
Yeah, so you're talking about half of the roster has never played a game. Right. Now, that's so everybody's like, oh, well, they're back. Well, these kids all have to learn. But where that's going to help is even if these kids are young, you're going to start seeing better and better players on their special teams kind of across the board. And I think you're going to see better coverage. You're going to see better returns. You're going to see more blocks. So it's not just the actual specialists themselves. It's the ability to get young defensive backs, young linebackers, young receivers, young running backs on these special teams units to get some things done.
There was one point in 2018 where 8 of the 11 on kickoff coverage were walk-ons.
Right. And that's so people are saying, what's going on here? And it's this is no offense to those kids because they're out there playing their hearts out.
Look, there's nothing to do with that.
They're out there doing the best they could absolutely do, but they're going against teams that have a bunch of young scholarship guys out there. And so I think you're going to see that area improve.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. But the unbalancing class, there's been so many dominoes to this. You talk about the linemen, and you mentioned specifically the defensive line, how they're working on offensive line now. Bill O'Brien did a lot of research and look, you know, how do you handle sanctions? How do you recruit in sanctions? Well, his thought was, look, let's go out and get all the skilled players, quote, that we can get, and we'll just fit everything around. Because that's what they were recruiting under. Well, now the door is open to make up for that, but you have to, quote, make up for it.
Right. Well, if I could be critical of one thing that Bill O'Brien did recruiting-wise, and it's really the overall, what he was able to do, faced with what he was doing, but even before the sanctions hit, Steve, there was a there was an event, the local Football Hall of Fame chapter, I forget exactly what it's called, but it was in the spring of
the National Football Foundation Hall of Fame.
Yes, thank you. I knew you could help me with that. And it was out at the Penn Stater.
Yes.
And he spoke at that, and one of the things he said was, this was before the sanctions even hit,
right,
that he was shocked at how many offensive linemen Penn State had.
Yeah, he said they had too many.
They had way too many. Yeah,
and not enough defensive backs.
Right. So then all of a sudden, they get hit with the sanctions, so he already wanted to cut down on the number of O-linemen, which may well have been a smart thing to do. I don't know. But then you have the sanctions thrown in, and now all of a sudden, uh-oh. So I think that was part of it. And frankly, you know, I think the last few years under Joe, I just don't think they were recruiting really well, generally speaking, on the O-line. There were some players who were good players, but generally speaking, it kind of fell off toward the end. So I think you're seeing it pick back up.
I think what you had with him is that you had a starting unit where most of it was really good, but if somebody moved on, there wasn't that next person up to step in. They didn't quite have that depth.
Well, and the other issue with the offensive line, as everybody knows, it's the one area, even beyond quarter. I mean, if you would have told me that Penn State was going to have a true freshman quarterback who was going to do what Hackenberg did, I would have never believed it. I would not. And that absolutely proved me wrong. I always thought quarterback was the most difficult. Offensive line, clearly the most difficult position, in my view, to come in and start and or be a contributor as a true freshman. So when you're dealing with these sanctions and dealing with these situations where guys have to come in and contribute immediately, you know, think about last year. I mean, in my view, their best offensive lineman was Andrew Nelson.
Yes, he was. I agree with
that. And, you know, for whatever anybody wants to say about Donovan Smith and his potential, I thought he underachieved. But people, doesn't it seem now like Andrew Nelson's like a senior?
I know.
He was a redshirt freshman last year, never played a game.
And had never until this year done a winter program.
Right, because he was
hurt.
He was bumped up, barely played in the spring, and that's my point. So when people look at the struggles of the offensive line last year, you do have to put it into some perspective and realize that, now, are they going to be gangbusters better this year? I don't know, but I think they will be better overall because everybody has all the key factors, most of the key factors have played. It's going to come down to...
You now have seven guys out of... Seven guys that have already played and at least understand some semblance of game speed.
And if they are going to rely on a Paris Palmer, to JUCO transfer at one of the tackle spots, then he's going to have to come along. But to me, that is a better situation than the one they were in last year, where you had one guy with starting experience, and to me, again, an underachiever. You could, I think we could be more critical of guys once they're in the NFL, and everybody else to me. Listen, I thought everybody got better as the season went along, and I think that showed itself in the bowl game.
Yeah.
Guys like Mangiero, guys like Gaia, all those guys I thought got better. But I think it's a better situation this year than it was last year going into the preseason.
Yeah, guys that know how to play.
They've been through it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's in the end, that makes a big difference. Game experience means something. Finally, this is... they will tell you this is as brutal a month as they have to get ready for the season. It's, people talk about the winter program, but Dwight Gault will tell you that June is a big month for them. What are you hearing to this point about how this part of the process is going as they get ready? Well, finally, you see everybody at Lift for Life, but still.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that they can afford to beat the you-know-what out of these guys at this time of year because there's really nothing to prepare for. I shouldn't say that. Preparing for Lift for Life is huge, and Lift for Life is
they're preparing for the season. Right, this is a tough stretch.
Right. But yeah, I mean, let's put it this way: I've not heard anything bad, which is usually
that's good.
Right, that's usually the best part of it. Have not heard about any key injuries. Have not heard about.
It was this time
slacking.
A year ago we heard about Ben Klein as an example.
Right. So I think everybody ought to be collectively. Knocking on wood if you're a Penn State fan, but just in terms of having a chance to talk to a couple of the assistants on the coaches' caravan, the one thing Sean Spencer said, and again, I'm sure he was knocking on wood as he said it, D-line have some key guys to replace there, but he loves the depth, but he was just happy they came out of the spring healthy.
Yeah.
Wide receiver, I know we didn't see some guys in the blue-white game, but to hear Josh Gattis say it, going into the season, they should be just fine in terms of health. So I think across the board right now, again, knock on wood, I hope I'm not putting in the kiss of death. If the football staff's listening, it's not my fault. Steve's making me talk about this.
You don't blaming me. I'm just sitting here.
I'm just rambling on. But that's the one thing that hopefully when we're able to cover Lift for Life, everybody's there, happy, healthy, ready to go, raise some money for the fight against kidney cancer.
And that'll be Saturday, July 11th. Mark, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Mark Brennan, Fight On State.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Best of the Steve Jones Show as we talked all Penn State football today. Some Penn State football metrics. Mike Brennan from Fight On State, Ryan Snyder from Blue White Illustrated, coaches James Franklin and Terry Smith, and Rich Scarsella from the Reading Eagle all on today's show. And the podcast is available at stevejonesshow.com. Just click on podcast. You can listen to any of our shows anytime at your convenience. Just by clicking the mouse to stevejonesshow.com. Coming up later this week, we'll have the Phillies, former Phillies broadcaster Chris Wheeler, and we'll also remember Fran Fischer. It's the Best of the Steve Jones Show week on News Radio 1070 WKOK and on the WKOK app. News is next.